American Women. This is the story of women who have helped to develop the American way of life.
Daughters of destiny, mothers of might, homemakers of history. Women whose names are written large upon the honor rolls of our nation's great. Women courageous who have served and sacrificed, worked and dreamed, pioneered and persevered. Women whose names, deeds, and claims to fame have often been forgotten.
This is their story, and it is your story. Three centuries of women whose deeds are rooted deep in our past and whose influence will reach far into the future. The story of you, the pioneer women of today who are blazing the trails of tomorrow. The United States Office of Education and the National Broadcasting Company take pride in presenting the ninth chapter in this epic tale of women in the making of America. Today we bring you the story of women who have helped to develop America's seafaring tradition. It's the story of women and the sea.
You're right. He is too close to the wind.
Well, Mother, it won't be long now. Our anchor has been cleared and our voyage is nearly over.
In less than an hour, Sheridan, we'll drop anchor and be getting the sail covers on.
And so, once again, Mary Sheridan Farnstock helps to bring the three-masted schooner into port. 6 days from now, on January 1st, that schooner with Mrs. Farnstock and her sons aboard will set sail on a 40,000-mile voyage to the South Seas. Mary Sheridan Farnstock, author of I Ran Away to Sea at 50, looks forward to another grand adventure.
This time it will be a scientific voyage to gather data for the American Museum of Natural History. We're going to broadcast our adventure to you by radio as we record the primitive chants and drum music of the South Sea Islands or hunt for material for bird habitat groups. And I'm going back to see how the native women are getting along with their knitting. Last time I was there, I taught them to knit, but I forgot to teach them how to cast off. There's no telling what they've made in the meantime. Of course, as a friend of the natives and a member of the crew, I hope to help the expedition in every way I can. But it's really my son's trip. I'm just going along for the fun of it and because they invited me. Any woman would. Any woman would. And yet, a few hundred years ago, hardly any woman could. Then, as a rule, she wouldn't have been invited. Then, a taboo as strange and mysterious as any superstition of the South Sea Islanders generally kept women off the sea. In busy seaport towns along the New England coast, as men went down to the sea in ships, women stood upon the shore and watched, and waited, and wished.
Hepzibah Norton was one of those who wished. And on the day of her marriage to young Captain John Wentworth...
Good luck. Happy voyage. On the sea of matrimony.
Thank you.
Captain, you can pay for Chinese,
eh? Cargo's all aboard, Captain.
Good. Have the men stand by the headlines.
Aye, aye, sir. All hands! All hands!
Oh, John, I can't believe that we're actually sailing. China, the Indies, oh.
I hope I'm doing right taking you on this voyage with me.
You want to take me with you, don't you?
Hepzibah, dearest. Of course I do.
Oh, well, then let the sailors say what they will.
Hey, ready. Hand me the headlines.
Goodbye, Mother. Goodbye.
There's the men, Captain. They're cowering like a thundercloud.
I'll take care of them, Mr. Morgan.
Jenkins, Smith, Williams, Cross, Derek. Are you men anchored to the deck? You heard what Mr. Morgan said.
We're not taking any orders, Captain Wentworth.
An early time for mutiny, isn't it?
Well, you can call her what you like, sir, but we ain't moving. Not while she's aboard.
You know as well as we do, Captain, that a woman brings bad luck to a vessel.
And it ain't just our lives, Captain Wentworth. We'd lose the ship and the cargo.
John, I'm not going.
Hepzibah.
I didn't realize how strongly they felt about it.
But you know it's only superstition.
This is your first vessel, John. Your first cargo. If anything should happen, I'd only...
You're right, sir. She'll have. We'll have to weigh anchor, Captain. We're going to catch this tide.
Goodbye, John.
Hepzibah. My dear.
I'll wait for you, John. I'll wait.
Women of the Sea. Waiting, watching, wishing. But now and then, there was a woman who refused to wait. A woman for whom the lure of the sea was stronger than life itself. And such a one was Lucy Brewer. August 19, 1812. The United States frigate Constitution is bristling for a battle with the British Guerriere. Below deck, in the companionway, two sailors argue. One, slim, slight, and fine features. The other, tall, with powerful shoulders, bars the way.
You shan't go up there. I won't let you.
I signed on this ship as a Marine.
You're mad, Lucy, to try to go through with it. You may be wounded. Please, reveal your disguise. Tell the captain it was only a joke.
It's not a joke, Ned Peters. I disguised myself as a man because it was the only way I could get aboard. Because I wanted to perform something no other woman has ever achieved.
Oh, yes.
Lucy, Brewer.
Hands in position! Peter!
Number
four, gun
four!
Aye, Captain Hull.
You, Brewer, get to your station!
Aye, sir.
Don't do it, Lucy.
Let go my arm, Ned Peters. Someone will see us.
There was no place for a woman. Please tell them now before it's too late.
No, Ned Peters.
You don't know what a battle at sea is like.
Then I shall find out.
Peter, Brewer, where the thunder are you at your station?
I'll be right there, Captain Hull. But give me another man, sir. Brewer's hurt.
Nothing of the kind, sir. I'm as fit as he to do a man's job. Coming, Peter?
It often has been told how the British seamen board could rob the Tars of France or neat and handy. Oh, but they never found their match till the Yankees did them catch. Oh, the Yankee boys were fighting all the dandy, oh.
Lucy Brewer, Marine, served in the Constitution's battles against the Guerriere, the Java, the Cian, and the Levant. And after 3 years, she was honorably discharged, without her sex being discovered.
But most of the women who served America's seafaring tradition served as women, not as men. They helped build the shipping by staying home.
In Nantucket, center of the whaling industry, the whole life of the island depended upon them. While their menfolk were sailing around the Horn, seeking whale oil for the lamps of the nation, the women of Nantucket were raising the children, teaching them, curing their ills, herding the sheep, tending the shops, managing the business.
Super women who became mothers of great Americans. Mariah Mitchell, the astronomer, was born on Nantucket, and Abia Folger, mother of Benjamin Franklin.
Women who stayed home and watched and waited.
Noon of a spring day about 1850. In the clock tower of Nantucket's tallest church, four women sit knitting and watching the sea and the gray shingled houses below with their widow's walk on the rooftops.
I see Mrs. Swain is up on her walk, watching the ships come in.
2 years, isn't it, since Jonathan Swain's vessel went down. Oh, it must be hard for her knowing no ship will ever come in for her again.
It's hard for all of us. Not knowing. Oh, you needn't fear, Nancy Grant. Your man will come back, and with a boat full of oil. Captain Grant always has greasy luck.
I wonder what would happen if I were on board. If you were on board. Much good it does to wish, and him on the other side of the world.
Well, I could go meet him. In New Zealand, I know his course.
The way you say that, I'd almost think you meant it.
I do mean it. I'm tired of waiting here 4 years at a time. And I'm going.
Nancy Grant, are you plumb deaf?
How would you get there? Some ship will take me as a passenger. Daft or not, I'm going.
Nancy Grant, sailing down the coast to Panama.
Nancy Grant rattling across the isthmus in a two-wheeled carrier.
Nancy Grant taking ship again.
And when Captain Grant, on board the Niger, came sailing into Russell, New Zealand...
Nancy! Well, by the great horn spoon.
Land sakes! Look at that shirt you're wearing. Not a button on it.
No, as the sun from his ocean bed rising, while all the waters his whispering beam throw.
Nancy Grant sailed with her husband for 32 years, 8 four-year voyages. All her children were born in the South Seas, one in the Samoan Islands, one in New Zealand, another on Pitcairn Island. And as to the luck of the ship...
A clear day in the South Pacific. The Niger is cutting through the waves off French Rock, about 300 miles northeast of New Zealand. In the waist of the ship stands Nancy Grant, hanging out the weekly wash.
Zeke, would you please go aft into the galley and fetch me some more clothespins?
What now, Mrs. Grant?
Well, I don't mean tomorrow. Say, what's the matter with you men today? Why are you all so anxious to stay up on deck?
Well, we're getting near the whaling ground, Mum. Captain's promised a $20 gold piece to the first man who raises a whale and sings out far as she blows.
Well, if I happen to raise a whale while you're down getting clothespins, Zeke, I'll turn the gold piece over to the sailors for a treat the next time we're on port. Is that a bargain?
Sure is, Mom, but I'll be back before you can raise a minute.
Oh, Zeke! Zeke, look out there!
Where?
Off the port bow! Bye, Shiblo!
Ahoy, you men to love and well, lush she blows. Awake your sleepers and rise the gale, lush she blows.
Nancy Grant, probably the first woman ever to raise a whale. And much to the surprise of the whalers, Captain Grant's good luck continued till he was known as the luckiest man on Nantucket, the only captain who never made a poor voyage.
And once the old tradition was broken, other men began to take their wives along.
Women of the sea. Race of loyal wives who chose to call a whaler or a clipper ship their home.
Women to whom mutiny, tornadoes, bearing children in a raging sea, and drifting through weeks of blistering calm. All these were part of living.
But of all those women, one stands out. Mary Patton, wife of the captain of the Neptune's Car.
January 1854. The clipper ship Neptune's Car is bound from New York to San Francisco via Cape Horn. Her sails reefed, her hatches battered, she tips and tosses in a gale, dangerously close to the treacherous reefs of the Cape. Now, to make matters worse, Captain Patton finds his chief officer.
You don't leave me any choice but to put you in irons till the end of the voyage. The life of everybody aboard has been endangered by your incompetence.
I can sail a ship with both eyes shut.
Well, you can't sail my ship that way. Get out of here. Get to your bunk at once. I don't ever want to see you again.
What if I don't want to go?
Bolton, take him below. Take him below.
Get off. Joshua, is something wrong? You're shouting. It's not like you. Joshua, don't you hear me?
Huh? Oh, I thought I told you that... Oh. It's you, Mary. I guess I lost my temper. I didn't mean to. I'm confused.
Joshua...
Oh, that's right, Mary. Your head feels so cool on my head. So cool.
Oh, you have a fever. You should be below.
Below, yes.
Higgins!
Below.
Higgins, come here!
I sent the first mate below, didn't I, Mary?
Higgins!
Come on, ma'am.
Move, Higgins, for once.
Yes, ma'am. See, something the matter with the captain?
He's ill. Help me carry him to the cabin quickly.
Yes, ma'am. I'll get him. Don't worry.
Careful. Look, easy now.
Mary, off the starboard.
I got him.
Watch out.
There, dear. Watch out. Everything's all right. Put the captain in his bunk, Higgins. That's it. Now, as second mate, you'll be in command of the vessel. The course is already charted.
But, ma'am... I can't steer a course no straighter nor coil a rope. You'd better get the first mate to do it.
No, no, we could never trust him to do it. Well, if the crew can't navigate a ship, the captain's wife can.
Where are you?
Come right here, Joshua.
I can't see you. It's so dark. Light the lamp, Mary.
Why, it is lighted.
No. It can't be. You're fooling me. Please say you're fooling me, Mary.
God save us, ma'am. The captain's gone blind.
Get out of here, Higgins. Go on up on deck. Tell the men that I'm running the ship.
Yes, ma'am.
The ship's sinking, Mary. Sinking.
No, it's not, Joshua. Go to sleep, dear. Everything's all right. Neptune's car is headed for San Francisco with a woman at the helm.
And the Neptune's car reached San Francisco. Though Mary Patton herself was suffering with fever as she sailed through the Golden Gate.
Women of the sea, living their lives in rhythm with the wind and the tide. But not all their heroic deeds were performed aboard ship. Among those who stayed on shore and watched and waited was Ida Lewis, daughter of a lighthouse keeper off Rhode Island.
A blustery evening in March 1869. Waves lashing against Lime Rock Light in Newport Harbor. Inside the tower, from the trim round room that encircles their lives, Ida Lewis and her ailing father scan the sea.
Better light the lamp, Ida. Bad storm blowing up.
You're always afraid I'll be late lighting the lamp, aren't you, Pa? Your fretting's about as regular as the sunset. I couldn't miss.
I expect it's in your blood, same as it's in mine. Or it was in mine. It's hard to realize I'll never be climbing this tower again.
Oh, sure you will, Pa.
Well, anyhow, I'm a pretty smart fella to pick a daughter that can run a lighthouse as good as I can.
Pa, did you hear that?
What's that? Look, there's a dory out there. Capsized.
And some men clinging to it.
Oh, if I only had the use of my limbs. Ida, where are you going?
I'm taking your place, Pa.
Oh, don't be foolhardy, girl. You need it here for the life. You wouldn't have a chance in this storm.
I won't have a chance if I don't go. I can pull a strong oar.
Ida, come back here. Come back.
God. Just in time.
Ida Lewis was just in time on many occasions. 23 lives she snatched from the stormy waters off Rhode Island's coast. And between these thrilling rescues were long years of patient work as a sea-bound, gallant American woman, one of 200 mothers, wives, and daughters who have taken their menfolk's place at the light.
And today, as America celebrates its 150th anniversary, the beginning of lighthouse service, there is only one woman in the country carrying on the work of Ida Lewis, Mrs. Fanny Salter, keeper of the beacon off Turkey Point, Maryland.
Yet in New York City, another is guiding lost sailors into port. She is Janet Lord Roper, known to men on ships throughout the world as Mother Roper. In 1915, a young widow with three children, Mrs. Roper was doing welfare work at the Seamen's Church Institute. Sitting in her office overlooking New York Harbor, she listened to a mother's story.
It's about my son, Michael O'Malley. Here's his picture, you see. Only a lad he was. But the seas took him, Mum, same as it did his father.
Is Michael drowned?
Oh, the good Lord forbid, Mrs. Roper. The mother's heart in me says he's still alive somewhere.
Oh.
I thought, since you're always helping the sailors, maybe you could help a sailor's mother find her lost boy.
How long has he been gone?
10 years come Christmas. And it's hungry I am for the sight of him. Please, Mum.
Well, I've never done anything like this before, Mrs. O'Malley, but I'll try. I'll go down along the waterfront and see if I can find him.
Michael O'Malley? No, ain't never heard of him, but you might ask over to Harry's saloon.
Michael O'Malley. Well, there's a lot of O'Malleys coming here, Mom, but I don't remember no Michael.
Michael O'Malley? Yeah, sure, I know him. Shipped with him once from Singapore. Don't know where he is now, though.
Sorry, Mrs. Roper, but I'll keep a sharp lookout.
Sorry, Mrs. Roper.
Sorry, Mrs. Roper.
Sorry, Mrs. Roper.
Hello? Oh, hello, Mrs. O'Malley. No. No, not yet, but I'm still trying. I've sent his description to steamship officers and portmasters all over the world. Yes. Yes, I know you wanted him home for Christmas. Well, there's still a day left.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Excuse
me for busting in, but I saw a notice you had posted down in Cuba. You see, my name is...
You needn't tell me who you are. Here, get on this phone.
What? Hello?
Mom, this is Michael.
Yeah, Michael. But where do you suppose I am? I'm home. And say, darling, you'd better be hanging up another stocking in front of the fireplace.
Since that day in 1915, Janet Roper has located more than 5,000 missing seamen. For sailors all over the world, Mother Roper's guiding light marks the channel home.
Gallant American women of the sea. There have been thousands of them. The women who stood staunchly beside their husbands on the deck of the sinking Titanic. The women while others took their places in lifeboats.
The 10,000 women who served in the United States Naval Reserve during the World War, 37 of whom gave their lives.
December 11th, another gallant woman of the sea slipped her cable and drifted off to the land from which no sailor ever returned.
She was Jenny Sweetser Calcord, last of the wives of the clipper ship captain who spent many years sailing down and around Cape Horn. Today, her daughter, Joanna Calcord, who was born on board ship in the South Seas, is helping to preserve America's seafaring tradition. She is collecting the songs of American sailormen from such authorities as Captain Dick Maitland of Sailor's Snug Harbor.
You see, Captain Maitland, I want to write these songs down and publish them. The words and music, so folks won't forget them. And so if you'll sing Lowlands for me.
Aye, Miss Calcord. We'll steer her right on her course if you'll give me a hand with the chorus.
Aye, aye, sir. Weigh anchor.
I dreamed a dream the other night.
Lowlands, away, my John.
I dreamed a dream the other night.
My lowlands, away.
Today in America, the salty traditions of the clipper ship and the doughty captain's wives are almost forgotten. Yet here and there, we still find women proving that they, too, can earn a living from the sea.
In Norfolk, Virginia, where Captain Patty Morissetti directs a fleet of ocean-going tugs, hiring the crews, making the contracts, and inspecting the boats.
In Louisville, Kentucky, where Captain Ma Green flies her sternwheeler between Louisville and Cincinnati.
In New York, where Elsie Jansen, who is shipped before the mast on many a vessel, plans trips for voyagers who choose to go by tramp steamer. In Seattle, Washington, where Jean Lane signs on as a member of a crew bound for Tahiti or Ceylon, standing in line with the other deckhands, speaking their language. They ask your age, look at your teeth, scratch you for all the inoculations, size you up as to decency, and there you are. You belong. And they take you at your own valuation.
And today, America's young women are preparing for a seafaring career. The Girl Scout mariners in the east, the campfire girls sea gypsies in the west. On miniature catboats and mighty schooners from Buzzard Bay to Puget Sound, they are learning to tie the sailor's knot, to climb the rigging, to coil a rope. Tomorrow's gallant women of the sea, ready to take their place at the tiller.
For we are outward bound, you know.
Hands to the girls, so hands it.
For we are outward bound, you know.
Hands to the girls, so hands it.
To the ever-growing audience of these educational broadcasts, the staff of Gallant American Women sends its warmest greetings and best wishes for the new year. And as the new year starts, we bring you these programs. January 2nd, Women of Learning. January 9th, The Story of Great Women Teachers. January 16th, Women Explorers, daring scientists who have explored strange lands and the deep sea to bring back facts vital to science. January 23rd, Women as Historians, Essayists, Novelists, and Poets. Complete texts of the scripts of these broadcasts are published each week in cooperation with the Columbia University Press. Now ready are 9 scripts, including today's on seafaring women. We invite you to send for your copy today. To help cover the cost of mailing and handling, send 10 cents to Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. The address again is simply Gallant American Women, Washington, D.C. Next week, Women of Learning. American Women, an NBC public service feature, is a series of dramatizations prepared and presented by the United States Office of Education, Federal Security Agency, with the cooperation of the Women's Division of the National Broadcasting Company, and with the assistance of the Works Project Administration. Script by Jane Ashman, assisted by Helene Bamberger. Program supervised by Eva Hansel. Historical consultant, Mrs. Mary R. Beard of the World Center for Women's Archives, and Dr. Eugenie Leonard. Original music by Rudolf Schramm. This is the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.